Greetings and good evening, everyone, and welcome back to the Mark Fraley Podcast. Today is Friday, May 4, 2018. It is a warm and overcast day here in Nashville. Rain showers are forecast for this afternoon. We have had a definite warming trend over the past couple weeks, and my flame azalea is in full bloom. It is outstandingly beautiful this year. We are now starting to harvest lettuce and radishes from the garden. I want to thank everyone who tuned into or downloaded our last interview with Bob Fulcher. Also, to remind everyone of the upcoming concert for the benefit of the Cumberland Trail State Park, May 19, at the Tennessee Performing Arts Center. Yesterday, I sat down and had a talk with my old friend, Mary Wary. Mary will be well known to my park and recreation friends. As you will hear, Mary came up through the ranks of the Nashville Parks and Recreation Department and became the long-serving assistant director in charge of recreation services for the city of Nashville. An advocate of professionalism in the field of parks and recreation, she was the first woman to receive the Distinguished Fellow Award from the Tennessee Parks and Recreation Association. This is that society's highest award. Her achievements are many. Noteworthy is being a major force in the establishment of the Warner Park Nature Center and of nature study programming in the parks, concerts and special events at Riverfront Park, which was new at that time. Also, the elevation of cultural arts programming, music, dance, and recreation services for the special needs populations became an integral part of recreation programming in Nashville. As is often true, when you interview someone you've known a long time, you learn something interesting and new. I won't spoil it, but I sure hope you'll enjoy my interview with this remarkable lady. Mary Wary, welcome to the Mark Fraley Podcast.
Thank you. I think this is a real privilege and an honor to be asked to join you.
Well, thank you for making time to see me. And you know, we're out here at your home in Oak Hill, and it's just a gorgeous place. And I thank you for inviting me in. I appreciate it very much.
You're very welcome.
Mary, I've known you for a long time. I think I've met you back in the late 70s, probably.
Surely. I'm sure it was.
Very soon after you were named Superintendent of Recreation, I think. I had just come into state government, having been in Gatlinburg and Sevierville, and It was a funny time because I had agreed to be the chairman of the TRPA conference, which was to be held in Gatlinburg, but I wasn't living up there anymore.
Right, I forgot about that.
And so I had to call on everybody in the whole state to help me get that done, and you were so nice to help me.
Yeah.
And I think that you had the conference the year after that. I'll never forget that.
Yeah, we were so helpful. We hosted several conferences while I was in Parks and Recreation, the TRPA. We moved around.
So, Mary, I want to talk with you just a little bit about your life and circumstances in the Parks and Recreation field. When you grew up in Nashville.
Well, I did. I'm originally from Hickman County. I was born in Only, Tennessee, and then my family had to. My father had to move to Nashville in order to get work, and so I did. I went to elementary school here, and then all of my education, and still live here.
You were kind of a standout athlete in high school.
Well. If you say, yes, I think so. I played about every sport you could play, and I was fortunate enough to play in the very first girls' tournament, state tournament. It was played at David Lipscomb, and then I was fortunate enough to make all city and all district and all regional and all state.
In basketball.
In basketball.
Right, right.
That's right, yeah. So I was a little short, but I was very fast.
So we're here at your home, and I guess my listeners have heard your small dog warning us of somebody coming in and out or something. I don't know.
Well, usually it's like a Grand Central Station here, so don't be surprised.
All
if
right,
people coming
just,
in and
just
out.
Just terrific. So yeah. Just everybody be aware. We're in a home, and there are home noises going on.
That's
so.
Right. That's right.
All right. So you went to Lytton High School.
I did.
And then on to Peabody.
I actually went to Vanderbilt first.
Okay. Okay.
I wanted to be a doctor. And so I applied to get into Vanderbilt and was fortunate enough to do so. But after my first semester there, realizing that my daddy was a sheet metal worker and my mother was a sewing machine operator and that we couldn't afford Vanderbilt. So I started at Peabody. Well, actually, in between there, I went to a lab technician school for 18 months. Then I went to finish that, and wasn't happy with that. So I started with Parks and Recreation in 1960 and also started at Peabody and worked my way through college and with my bachelor's and my master's, working at night in a community center.
So your degrees from Peabody were in health, physical education, recreation?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
With an emphasis on the recreation part, I
Well,
presume.
But there was no such animal.
Okay.
In fact, recreation was probably dangling off the
okay.
internet during those days. It was actually physical education. Recreation was just, you know, nobody really was, we were not involved that much in recreation. But it changed rapidly over the next few years.
It sure did. I want to get into that with you.
Yeah.
That school at that time was not associated with Vanderbilt.
Absolutely not. It was George Peabody College for Teachers.
Right, and mm-hmm. it was an internationally renowned school.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yes. Yes, very much so.
Yeah. A lot of experimental programs.
Oh, yeah.
And that sort of thing.
Yeah, especially in special education. It was well known for the special education program, and it was a wonderful school. And the difference, the reason that I was happy that I went to Vanderbilt, went to Vanderbilt and then to Peabody. At Vanderbilt, I tended to be a number, but when I got to Peabody, I was actually known as Mary Wary. And it was a lot like going to high school in that you knew the people, you knew the teachers, they knew you. It wasn't an it. You were a somebody.
So you had worked in the Nashville Parks system while you were going to school and even before that, I presume?
Actually, I started out as a play leader on the playground, and then that following end of that season, the Shelby Park Community Center opened, first one of the big fine community centers in those days, in 1960, and I moved up the hill literally from the playground at Shelby Park and then became a recreation leader. And then I started
at the community center.
At the community center.
Okay.
And then I worked 2 to 10, Monday through Friday, every other weekend, and went to school from 8 until 2 in the morning.
My goodness. And then you graduated, and how did you get into the full-time?
Well, actually, the department was beginning to expand. There were a few more community centers being built, and Jack Spohr was the recreation superintendent at that time. And I had received a phone call from some of the high schools wanting to know if I was interested in coaching their basketball team, and I really, really wasn't. Even though that I played basketball, I just didn't want to coach. So Mr. Spohr called me one night at home and asked if I could come over. And I said, well, yes, be happy to. And he offered me the position of assistant superintendent of recreation, and that was his assistant.
Right.
So after he retired, then I became the superintendent of recreation.
And that was, 78 or 79?
Somewhere in that neighborhood. Yeah. I don't recall
exactly,
but somewhere in that neighborhood.
When you first got started as the superintendent of recreation,
mm-hmm.
Well, let me back up a second. Mr. Spohr, let's talk about Jack Spohr. I had the privilege of knowing him a little bit, not much, because he had retired, I think, when I was on the scene.
Mm-hmm.
I do remember him being really an athletics-oriented
guy. He was. But the thing that now that I have grown up, so to speak, I realized what a uniqueness he had, because he not only cared about balls and bats, but he cared about expanding recreation into something more than you know, just hitting a ball. And in fact, I continued to carry that on through my career.
Well, that's what I want to hear about. How did you expand the availability of recreation while you were in charge of that?
Well, gosh, I hope I can chronologically do justice, but I started, I felt like, taking an offshoot from him, that there were more people and children who really didn't care anything at all about softball, baseball, basketball. Their recreational opportunities were slack. There weren't anything. So I started the first dance division, the music division. I'm the mother of the Warner Park Nature Center. Any of the new programs that we started, I had a group of really valuable staff people and said, hey, we're going to take a dive and we'll see if we can sink or swim. And fortunately, I hired people like Bob Parrish and Janet Clough and some of those folks who were willing to get out there and use their own particular talents and go for it. And now the dance division at Metro Parks is exploding. I mean, it's still going strong. Back in those days, we were fortunate enough to get a lot of federal money. And we got it during the summertime, and then it extended on into the regular year. So we were able to start a nature program for inner city children. We also had day camps and we didn't have residential camps, but we were able to expand in the community center and serve children who never had any opportunity to be in the woods. And I can remember so vividly taking some children from one of the inner city housing projects to Warner Park, and we were going to do a night hike. And they were scared to death, and we had flashlights, but we couldn't use them until we came up on it was a dark road, so we took our flashlights out and we said, look in the grass, look in the weeds, what do you see? Oh, look at those. Somebody dropped their jewels. It turned out to be spider eyes.
Oh.
That was the way that they learned that you really don't step on a spider because it has value and it has beauty in nature. So we just took that and went on with it. In fact, I'll give you another example. We hiked up to one of the roads in Warner Park. We all laid down on our backs, and one of the staff people pulled out a recording of an owl hooting. Lo and behold, there was an owl that answered back and actually flew in and across the kids. Well, I don't even have to tell you. I mean, first of all, it scared them to death, but then once again, it was one of those opportunities that they never had before, and I'm hoping that what we were able to do was to implant in them that there are more things to love and appreciate than to be afraid of.
Just taking the nature study programming, mm-hmm. and the creation of the Nature Center at Warner Park. Mm-hmm. Now, I remember in the early days of the Nature Center, you were utilizing some older buildings that were available to you.
That's right. I pulled one of the recreation people out of the community mm-hmm. centers because he tended to like to hike and he was into the nature aspect, and we moved him into an old farmhouse.
That's right.
He had two beagles and a cot. That was his, but he lived there. But he began to make adjustments in the facility, and we were able to expand that program into what it is today. But I will have to say that the Friends of Warner Park, oh my goodness, you can't say enough about them, because with a metro budget, you know, you were always limited. But they were always there to supplement and to buy extra land.
Well, the program grew.
Oh, the program definitely expanded.
And I guess you'd have school children bussed in.
Absolutely.
For programming, yeah. From all over town.
Yeah, that's right. And Sandy Bivens was the Nature Center director at that time, and Bob went up to be a superintendent. And Sandy just absolutely did a marvelous job in the educational aspects. She was a major birder. I cannot throw enough accolades to her either as to what she
started an organic garden out there at one point.
Yes,
I recall.
Yes, everything. Yeah.
Now, you know, just fast forward. Do we now have three nature centers or four nature centers in Metro?
You know, I'm not sure because I know we have three, but I'm not sure we may have four.
We have Bell's Bend and then over at
Shelby
Bottoms. and then the one at Warner Park. So there may just be the three.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I can't pull that out of my hat right now.
Yeah, but so that program has borne fruit.
Absolutely, and been such a major contributor to the community. Yeah, right. Big time. In so many different ways. It's not just like the Iroquois or the birds and the bees, and it's just so much quality that has been put in there that now is shared all over the Davidson County and beyond Davidson County. The school systems use us all over Middle Tennessee.
In the field of cultural arts, and I remember, you know, starting in Parks and Recreation and having to persuade the powers that be that there's other things besides athletics.
Right.
Y'all had an exemplary program, and I remember, was it Paul Downey?
He was involved with that? Well, he was one of my assistants.
Right.
And after a while, and he was first was he was in charge of the music program.
Oh, I'd forgotten that.
Yeah. And then he was. I don't know, he was one of those kind of people that really was an arts person, but he adapted to recreation beautifully. He got the move. He saw what it was all about. So music, guitar, anything. I mean, we really expanded the music program and the dance program. I can't say enough about it because I started it. And I will have to, I've got some stories about that too, because I knew absolutely nothing about dance. And I had to take a ballet class in Peabody in order for me to graduate.
Okay.
Yes. And so being the athlete that I was, I only had basketball shoes. And I had to put a black sweatsuit on instead of my leotards and tights and my ballet slippers. So one, I have a guardian angel, and she is Clara Haddix. I believe in guardian angels, and she definitely helped to make my life go where it is. She came in one day because when you stand at the bar and you're supposed to point your toes. Well, obviously, I couldn't put them in my basketball shoes. So she came in casually one day and dropped a pair of ballet slippers beside of me. And she said, you know, why don't you try these? Maybe they might be more comfortable and you could actually point your toes. So I sat down on the floor, took my shoes off, put the ballet slippers on. Well, from that point on, I said, hey, you know, I'm a real athlete, so I can do all this stuff.
Absolutely.
Well, let me tell you something. That's not so. Because your body as an athlete works one way, and to be a dancer works totally a different way. And so I learned to appreciate what it meant to take ballet classes or whatever dance classes there were. And in fact, Janet Clough, she finished her master's at Peabody, and when I moved up into the superintendent position, she moved into my position with the dance division. And so it just kept going. The Nutcracker that is still going on. It's the mini Nutcracker, and it's still being held at Harpeth Hall. And she's the one who started that. And that's, I don't know, 25 years ago or whatever it is. The same thing with our arts programs. We have the Arts Center. People would come and take classes, but yet we would also send instructors out into the community. So we work with seniors, we work with special needs people, and that was another thing that I'm going to, you know, throw it, because we started the special needs program. We had a total staff that provided recreation for that.
I was trying to remember the name of the individual who was so enthusiastic and sharp in the recreation for special populations.
Kathy Rader. You will never forget Kathy Rader. If there's a special place in heaven, she's going to go there, because she dedicated her life, her professional life, and a lot of her social life. She made such a difference. She really did. I was so lucky, because the staff that I had, they believed in what I believed in, and we meshed together with we were such a team. We would have programs late at night, and the staff would stick right in there with me while we were working, and they weren't complaining because it was, say, midnight and we were still trying to put up from the playground circus, or we were parking cars at Warner Park because Haley's Comet was coming over. They just did what they had to do. And I'm also going to throw in a little something. I was in on the very first programs at Riverfront Park.
Sure.
And in fact, we started with the Saturday night dances. No stages, no special light, no nothing. We just had one of the community bands to come down and play. And I was told that that would never work because people were afraid to.
You all had a portable bandstand, I think.
No, we didn't have anything.
No.
We just had the concrete.
Okay.
We evolved into the stage.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
But the point that I want to make is that at 10 o'clock on a Saturday night, there was used to be an ice cream shop right there where
yes.
the Hard Rock Cafe is,
right.
or down in the corner. And there was a grandmother and a grandchild sitting there licking their ice cream cones at 10 o'clock on Saturday night. And so I went and talked with them. So that just told me then that people, it's a bunch of hooey to say that people are not going to come down here because they're afraid. Because when you come, you're coming in a group of like-type people. And really, now I'll have to say that back in those days, we had ruffians, but we were not facing all of the stuff that people are facing now. But I think back when I look at all of downtown Nashville now, the First and Broad, from First to Fifth, and I feel just a great deal of pride. Because we were there
on
the 4th, we started the 4th of July celebration there at 2:30 and 3 o'clock in the morning when the whole thing was over with. Basically, Jim Fike, myself, and two or three other staff people, we sat down on the curb of First Avenue and just sat there for a few minutes, and we begun to see some of the homeless people come out to get all the beer bottles or whatever it was. But there was such a... There was such a pride in what we did. We worked all day long from like 8 o'clock in the morning. And of course, we had our park maintenance guys, everybody. We didn't have the public works people until they came in right at night with the sweepers. We were there doing everything that needed to be done. And we were parks and recreation people. So I'm very, very proud of that.
You should be proud of it because Nashville has changed. And I guess that's a subject that we need to talk about, and the changes that have occurred in Nashville over the years. I think probably in 78 or 79, maybe 410 or 20,000 people lived in Davidson
mm-hmm,
County,
mm-hmm.
and now it's at least double that,
if not more.
Yeah. Tell us about growth in Nashville and what that's meant to recreation.
I think there's ebbs and tides. Recreation has changed somewhat in that because we do not get the federal money that we used to get, we are very limited into what we can actually do. Parks would be added, like during the Fulton administration, parks were added, but yet we didn't get any extra money to maintain them or
yeah.
No, that's right.
Yeah.
But and today it's just totally, in my opinion, it's totally different. The activities, there are fewer facilities, like for instance in Metro Parks. We had like 30 community centers, and now we have like, I think that's 6 regional centers, and we still have a handful of the smaller centers, but nothing like we had before. I don't know that much about on the day-to-day basis, but I know that it has definitely changed a great deal, and a lot of people have... If I go back over to the office or something, they'll reminisce, but they'll say, well, it's just not like it used to be. Different people in charge, the whole demeanor of thinking about things, what's your priorities, what you want to do with the money, et cetera, it's just changed unbelievably. So it's nothing really like what we knew back in the 60s and 70s and 80s.
I think that you're... During your time, and my recollection is all of the departments across the state were having to be creative.
Yes,
and find,
very much so.
Find ways to get programming
absolutely.
Out there
absolutely.
With the minimum of resources.
That's right. Went after a lot of grants. A lot of people wore different hats. In other words, you just didn't come in and say, well, I'm just going to be the basketball person. You would wore the whole sports division, and I had a sports division.
Right.
Actually, I had 4 superintendents under my direction, and then that went, filtered out into probably in the summertime, I would have probably as many as 340 or so employees. And a lot of that, though, we were able to, I keep going back to say federal money, we were able to extend and expand programs. For instance, we were able to keep the swimming pools open longer, hire more kids. We were able to extend the days of the week, the number of hours. We taught sewing. We did so many creative things that you couldn't do with just a regular 9-to-5 Monday through Friday budget.
I can remember that there was the CETA program, there was a summer feeding program, there was other different programs.
Absolutely. Like that. And I'll have to tell you now, it made a lot of money. And I get a little bit ticked off at some people today saying, oh, well, we just don't need any of these free programs. Everybody needs to pay. Well, until you've walked into somebody else's shoes, you better not say those kinds of things, because I saw so many kids get their meals from the parks.
True enough.
Free, and they wouldn't have another meal. They would have a meal with us, and then I don't know what they'd do in the afternoon. But it still really upsets me when I think about. We had a senior citizens program. It covered the city. We had the special needs, and until people can see what the money goes for and what their life would be like if they weren't privileged enough to have a job or an education or something like that, I get real upset with that. Still do.
I'm with you on that.
Yeah, I still do.
Let's talking about changes in society, and you were in the middle of it.
I was in the 60s.
During the 60s with all the clamor, but I guess the main thing is racial segregation in Nashville.
Well, I'm going to tell you this. I really think that in the 70s, in the 60s and the 70s, now I will tell you that when Martin Luther King was shot the night, I happened to be in my Green Park car, and I was driving through Hadley Park, and I had a rock hit my car. And I know exactly why the rock hit my car, because somebody was letting go of their frustrations. Well, I promise you, I think that, and once again, I believe in God things, and I had several of them and still have them, but I had most of my staff were black.
Sure.
And when I walked in on day one, after I had gotten my superintendent's job and all this sort of stuff, and I was making the same mistakes that whatever anybody would do, and I had one of my community center staff people to sit down. And said, Mary, can I talk to you? And I said, absolutely. And she said, Mary, we really like who you are, but we just don't like how you're getting there. And I said, fine, let's sit down and talk about it. Well, I was using all of the slang because I had never had an opportunity to have any interchange.
Now, Mary, tell me what you mean.
Well, I didn't. Well, because I lived in East Nashville. There were no blacks there.
Right.
I went to school with totally white. The same thing when I was in the early parts of my career with Parks and Recreation. Community centers were all segregated, and that changed. We begun to make changes, and I will have to say the thing that I'm saying that I was so blessed about was that something happened, and I can't even pinpoint it to you, but I keep going back to that example every time I talk to anybody. We meshed. The white staff and the black staff meshed together as though we were family.
Right.
And like on a Friday night, when we were supposed to be working, and I would say we're going to have an inserts, and we'd go to one of the community centers, and we would have, then everybody would bring a dish, the whole staff. So we learned, we ate together, we played together, we talked together, and we found out that, you know, everybody's the same. We have the same needs, the same desires. We want the same thing. And I will have to tell you that I'm some of my dearest and best friends in my whole long life has been the people who of color who really took me by my hand and said, Mary, let us lead you, and we'll get there together.
You know, Mary, you were nice enough back in the day to arrange for me to spend a day with two of your leaders, Booker White, and Adrian Green.
Absolutely.
And Adrian and I spent most of the afternoon going from one community center to another.
Yes.
For my listeners, these are two very elegant, nice black folk and leaders.
Yes, absolutely.
True leaders.
Oh, absolutely. And made a difference in the Parks and Recreation Department. Absolutely.
So in the early days, when the Supreme Court said separate but equal is no more, Nashville closed community pools. And
that was before
some
my
facilities.
Time.
I understand.
Yeah, yeah.
But then it began to work back toward a more happy circumstance.
That's right. Right. Yeah, and I really cannot put enough emphasis on how we all worked and how we made it work. And I'm not trying to put a star in my crown, but I think it was my attitude about things that we all got into our pants the same way, one leg at a time. And I didn't make any differences. And at first, they would think that I was. And then, once again, we'd sit down and we'd talk about it. I mean, I'd have a group session, and we'd sit down and talk about, why are you feeling like this? And then we were able to take the results of those meetings and apply them. And I tell you what, and I worked alongside of my staff. I don't care what it was doing, whether it was at one of the community centers where we had a shooting and the supervisor called me and said, "Miss Mary, you're going to have to come over here." She said, "I'm mopping blood." So I went over there and she and I mopped the floor because we'd had a shooting there. But I mean, when you take away all of the armor and whatever it was, we were just people working for the same goals. And it didn't make any difference whether you had a handicap or whether you were black or whether you were white or whatever it was. I had an opportunity a few years ago to go and talk to one of the charter school classes. And I think there were probably 8 or 9 of those. And the teacher wanted me to kind of talk like we're talking now about the early days, the 60s and the 70s. And I'll have to tell you again, it was one of those God things. There were a few whites and a few blacks. And they started asking me questions. And they had no idea that what segregation was like.
Oh, I see.
They when I said, "Well, I never had an opportunity to work with any people of color." "Why? Why didn't you?" And I said, "Well, because they lived on one side of town, I lived on the other. They rode in the back of the bus, and if I rode with my mom, I rode up in the front of the bus." Well, that just knocked their socks off. They asked me more questions, and they couldn't believe it. Well, you know, people, they work together now, and I said, "Yeah, because we've made a lot of progress. We've got a whole lot more to do." But I go back to my same thing. Until you've walked in somebody's shoes, you just can't complain about them, or you can't prejudge them, or whatever. You've got to know what they go through.
Mary, let's change the subject just a slightly. Mm-hmm. Because we're talking about societal changes and how that shows itself in parks and recreation.
Mm-hmm.
You were among the very first women to really have a leadership role in a park and recreation agency in our state. There were others before. I mean, I think Ruth Stamen that was in Chattanooga. Ruth Byrd? Ruth Byrd. But really you were the first to have a main job in the parks and recreation field. And I think maybe Kitty Frazier was the first maybe to be a director of a local agency. But how is circumstances changing, or have they changed for women in the park and recreation field?
I think it's a reflection of today. I think that women still have not broken that glass ceiling everywhere, but our Parks and Recreation Director right now in Metro Parks is a black female and doing a really good job. I'm proud of her. I really think that it has, we've just said it's time, and we didn't push. We just did a job. We did a good job. We applied ourselves, and therefore, we made ourselves be looked at and to be recognized. And I also think you just have to be forceful. You know, if somebody tries to push you around, they're going to keep pushing if you don't push back. And that's what a lot of us in the state, I know the women who I admire so much right now, who picked up the armor and marched. And I mean, you know what I say, I'm figuratively speaking, but really put themselves out there and did an absolutely outstanding job. So
tell me more, who you're speaking of and particularly.
Starlene,
sure.
Margaret Jones, okay. Kitty Frazier, those are the ones that jump at me right quick.
Yeah, let me, for the audience that doesn't know maybe these people, mm-hmm. Starlene, now Shackelford, uh-huh. was the director of Parks and Recreation in Clarksville.
Mm-hmm.
Who did you mention? Ruth. No,
Ruth Bird, at that time, she was like a community center manager. But okay. that was probably the highest level that you get.
Right.
Margaret Jones, Clarksville.
Also in Clarksville.
I can't think of anybody in Knoxville. Chattanooga. I can't remember anybody in Chattanooga. I'd have to look at the...
Okay.
But now we have a lot of younger women who are now heading up departments. And they just... They're doing a fantastic job. They've been in the profession long enough to be able to see what is needed and have adjusted and just are doing great.
Some differences in that many of the folks coming into the profession now actually have degrees in Parks
yes,
and Recreation
that's right,
Administration.
That's right. Yeah, certification has become important. Used to, nobody knew what certification meant. And then the National Parks and Recreation Association started pushing certification. Of course, then our state professional association did. And I have to say that I was in on the beginning levels of the TRPA. Remember well going to Oak Ridge with Jack Spohr and two or three others and sitting around a table and putting together TRPA. And that rose high enough that we were able to offer professionalism, classes, workshops, conferences, sharing across the state with each other. That helped us a lot.
I agree. You know, those meetings became very important mm-hmm. for people to come in
mm-hmm.
and hear what other people were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden you think maybe when you got there, you were thinking maybe that you were not on the right track.
Mm-hmm.
But then it reinforced,
mm-hmm.
oh yeah, I was not on the wrong track.
Well, I think one of the things, and I kept referring us to it, we were like a fraternity or a sorority, that if I wanted if the softball fees, we felt like that the softball fees should be raised, I'd pick up the telephone and I would call Murfreesboro and I'd call Chattanooga and I'd call Knoxville and all the cities around and say, what are you all charging your teams now? And that's how I would justify. If we wanted to go up, I'd justify it because, well, you know, they're doing it here. And they were equal. It wasn't small town and a big city. I mean, we were comparable sizes at that time. So it really provided a lot of professional leadership and guidance to old people and young people. I mean, we really relied on TRPA to keep us going.
And that organization has grown tremendously.
Yes, it has.
I think when I first got involved with maybe 400, maybe 500
mm-hmm.
members,
mm-hmm.
it's now way over 1,000 members.
Yeah, that's
so
right. That's exactly right.
Mary, you were, I guess you may characterize this, you worked with some people who had vision,
mm-hmm.
and I'm thinking of Charlie Spears
mm-hmm.
And Jimmy Fike.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about those two fellas.
Well, Charlie came to us from another state, and he brought in. I like Charlie a lot, but he was not made. I don't know how to say this, but he was not made of the same cloth. I mean, he was more of an administrator than we were. We were hands on. Jim Fike and I knew each other since we were 17 years old. He played basketball at DuPont, and I played at Litton. And he got a job with the Parks before I did, but he was part time sports supervisor. And then I take that back. I was on before he came on. Sorry. I was a play leader, then worked in the community center, and then Jimmy got hired as the part-time sports supervisor. So we worked closely together. He'd come in, I'd say, Jimmy, one of these days you're going to have to get me a job. Get me out of this community center and let me move up the ladder. So we always had, but he and I were very, very dear friends, very close friends. And I'd say that our thought processes were along the same lines. We moved the Parks and Recreation Division in the same direction, and it was upward and outward. It wasn't always upward, but it was outward too. But he was a special guy. I tell you, people would ask me sometime, why didn't I want to be the director of Parks and Recreation? I said, oh, I'll tell you why. Because I wouldn't last but about 6 weeks, because I could not do the job of kissing up to all the politicians. That's just not my personality. But I'll have to tell you that Jim Fike was absolutely one of the finest people in the world. He could work with anybody. He could smooth his way anywhere. And he was always for the right reason. It wasn't because, he was trying to get more tennis courts or get more lights or get more money to do this or whatever. And he knew exactly how to play the game, and he did an outstanding job with it.
Nashville is unique in that it has a huge city council.
Mm-hmm.
And that was part of the job of the director,
to know each
of those councilmen.
Absolutely. And he would tell me, he'd say, you know what? He said, they're my best friends 11 months out of the 12. And then when it would come budget time, they didn't even remember my name. Because they were wanting to get their ball team, their ball money, and they were trying to, play the games. But he did really good. He turned out to be a favorite with all of the mayors. They all, if you talk to any of them, they would just put him on the highest rung of the ladder.
Right. Jimmy ended up becoming Commissioner of Conservation
and
Environment.
Right. Yeah.
And of course, in that role, was out about the entire state,
mm-hmm.
which was a
mm-hmm.
he had retired and then came out of retirement
right.
to do that job
right.
At the request of Governor Bredesen,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and did a terrific job.
He was
well loved by all
yeah.
the parks. And
well, he was. You know, there's some people that put on a facade. Jimmy didn't do that. He didn't have to do it. He was who he was. He was a good man. He called it the way he saw it. I mean, he was one of those earthy kind of people that, he wasn't going to be anything except a guy that came from Old Hickory, Tennessee.
Terrific.
And played basketball in a small gym. That's it. And he was a good athlete, a very good basketball player.
And had a, and
oh,
had
and a good golfer.
And I was going to say, had a great interest in golf.
Oh, yeah. He was a good golfer. My only time I ever shot an eagle, I was playing with him. And I still have the scorecard.
Oh, good for you.
I don't think I ever scored another eagle, but I kept that scorecard because it was something I was very proud of.
So, Mary, you retired in, what, 2004?
Two.
2002. Mm-hmm. So how are you spending your time in retirement?
Yikes. I don't know, because somebody will look. If you look at my calendar, I had somebody look at it the other day and said, that's the calendar of a retired person?
Mm-hmm.
I said, yeah. I do my house, my garden. I really do a lot of gardening, but I also have worked in dog rescues. I don't know if you're familiar with 2004 in Franklin, the Jennifer Salisky had a puppy mill in Franklin, Tennessee.
Oh, yes.
And
yes.
I thought I was going to volunteer, which would mean like an hour a day or whatever. I spent about 7 months there, 6 and 7 days a week, taking care of 230 little Maltese pups. And they were in such bad shape. And there were a group of women, there's probably about 30 or 40 of us. And we finally were the core group. And I mean, we worked, we would come in the morning and we'd see these little things that looked like rats on the floor. And it would be little babies that had been born at night. Because,
because
when the raid happened, nobody knew who was pregnant, who wasn't. A lot of them were sick and died. And it was, I will not go into the details because you would not believe it. And it's just was very, very ugly. So I also am very involved in the Oak Hill city government. I've lived here for 42 years. I've seen a lot of good things, bad things, changes, whatnot. And so I have been involved and really do enjoy what we have here. The commercial development people were going to break in and make us look like Green Hills, etc. But fortunately, one of those God things happened. I had gotten a copy of a little news article that said that the commissioners at that time had passed an ordinance, which would be in November, to change the residential status of Oak Hill to partial or to commercialization. And had I not, fortunately I have a big, huge email list, so I sat down and punched a button and it went viral. So everybody in the world came together to fight the commercialization. And then had we not done that, in December of that year, it would have become reality because the council, I mean the commissioners would have passed it. But that was during the days when people, everything was real closed. Nobody, in fact, I lived here for probably 25 years and didn't even realize we had a government. We were a satellite city. And now we really try to push that and let everybody know so that we don't have another situation in the 13-14 time. But
sure, you're within metropolitan government, yes. But you have your own city council.
Yes, we do.
You don't have fire and water of that. But
no. We have a board of commissioners. We have a BZA. We have a planning commission. We are
so
a
city manager.
We're a city manager government. We're not a mayoral government, but we do have a mayor, and that mayor is not voted upon by citizens. It is appointed amongst the three commissioners. Yes. And we have some outstanding people right now serving our city in leadership positions.
Nice.
So it's a good thing.
And you do some travel. I know you've got a great big Winnebago type.
I've been doing this. I've been in every state in the United States and except Alaska. I haven't been there in my motorhome. And I've been in every province in Canada but one. And I don't want to go to Labrador because I don't want to have to get on the boat and go for 12 or 14 hours in the North Atlantic. So, but this actually makes my 13th motorhome.
And, my goodness.
Yeah, and I've been doing it for 35 years, I guess, or close to 40 years. I've been doing it forever. When I drove in this driveway, I came in a little brown van, and it was a little brown van camper, and the rest of it is, the rest of the story.
So you maintain that interest in the outdoor recreation.
Oh, yes. Very much so.
Exactly.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I actually, that's one of the reasons why I cherish the name of Mother of the Nature Center, because I got to grow up in the woods hunting with my dad and fishing with my dad and my uncles and my granddaddy. And there were so many things that I saw and fell in love with and didn't even realize it until I became an adult. And I just wanted everybody else to have that same opportunity and to have that same devotion and love for the outdoors that I had, and appreciation. And so that was very meaningful to me when I had that opportunity to start the Nature Center. And then they gave me a plaque and said I was the mother of the Warner Park Nature Center. So those are so special. I can't put any kind of words to say how special they were.
Well, Mary, thank you so much for spending some time with us today.
Well, I'm just happy to see you. Gosh, it's been a long time since we've had
it's fun to chat.
Time.
We'll do this again.
Yeah.
Thank you again, Mary.
You're very welcome.